interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
1037 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 1037 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy Monday to you. And it is a Monday 311 edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 1037 The Game. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. It's a Monday. There's no baseball. There's no basketball. Just a three-hour tour set to unfold. Great guest list coming at you today. I'll share that at the end of today's opening segment. We'll talk to a state champ. We'll have on some of our usual Monday crowd and one of the best investigative journalists covering sports this state has ever seen will be with us in hour number one. But you know where I'm leading off. One of the wildest scenes the PMAC has ever seen. Unfolded Saturday night. Have to start there. Happy to take your calls as well. 706-0111. It's just me, Ben Love, him, Clint Domingue, and you for the next 3 hours as we got you from inside the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. And here's the thing. Once again, for the most part, the national media doesn't understand what's happening on a local basis. I did a hit yesterday with my friend Barrett Salee, ESPNU Sirius XM Radio, and the topic of conversation surrounding Joe Oliva, because Barrett's not ignorant, wasn't how dare he in this instance. It is, of course, how many things are stacking up. And this is absolutely an aggregation of frustration pent up over years with an athletic director that LSU fans just can't stomach anymore. But what I will tell you right now is this. The decision to suspend Will Wade went over his head, went over F. King Alexander's head. The decision ultimately was made, as everyone is, by the LSU Board of Supervisors. And so you fast forward to today, the Monday after, 4:05 p.m., LSU less than 92 hours away from playing in an SEC tournament quarterfinal game. And everything is still in the hands of the board. Despite what happened inside the PMAC, despite the banner hanging, despite everything, Tony Benford taking over as the interim coach, going on the SEC coaches teleconference today, despite it all, this is in the hands of a group of individuals who have very, very different views. And that's where I'll lead off today. I don't need to tell you what happened in the PMAC. It was seen on a national stage. It's been written about on a local, regional, and national stage. I don't have to go back in time with you anymore. If you still think LSU suspended Will Wade because of the Yahoo report, I can't help stupid and I can't fix it. The man was suspended because he didn't attend a meeting and disclose information requested by his boss and his boss's boss. If you don't understand that, at a fundamental level, I really can't help you. But what I can assist you with is how to look at this moving forward. And everything I heard, and my phone didn't stop buzzing yesterday, I hear Sunday was a very, very busy day on Lakeshore Drive. And that everybody was open for conversation. This was not a Sunday go to church, barbecue, I'll check my email tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. affair. All hands were on deck. And I hear that there are, as I mentioned earlier, differing opinions. Without mentioning specific names, I hear there are certain members on the Board of Supervisors that would like LSU's chance at national glory. I hear there are others that are more prudent. Me personally, you can probably tell which side I'm on. I'm not anti-Wade, but you have to protect the greater good. And that's exactly what LSU's doing here. To keep it 100 with you, it's exactly what Will Wade's doing here. That's why his lawyers won't let him talk to LSU. So what I'm telling you is this. I ended this show Friday just about 100% convinced Will Wade would never coach at LSU again. I enter this show today on Monday, and I'm trying not to live as much in a black and white type of world. Trying not to throw out absolutes. 100%, it'll never happen. But it would still shock the hell out of me if Will Wade coaches this program again in this season, and probably even beyond that. And I went through this during my weekly reboot podcast. There's so much that would have to happen from this point until Wade is allowed back on that sideline. And again, it's not as easy as you might think. Sit down with Joe Oliva. Sit down with F. King Alexander. No, make sure that everything passes muster with the Board of Supervisors that's always been and still is as political as it gets, and they don't often agree. And so right now, what I'm telling you is it would still shock me if he is going to be back on that sideline, but I don't think at this point it's safe to say it's a 100 or zero proposition, because there are some people I hear on that board that are rooting hard for this thing to be reversed. To me, what's more interesting going forward is, will Javonte Smart be allowed to play? And the skeptic in me, yeah, that guy exists. The skeptic in me wonders if Naz Reid really was suffering an injury or a concussion. The skeptic in me naturally wonders, and again, no inside information, just a guy who has spent some time connecting dots in his career. If there is another tape out there and Reid is implicated, could this be the reason? It may be absolutely much ado about nothing when it comes to Reid. But what I can tell you is this. Without the big fella, LSU ain't making a run in the NCAA tournament. So I hope that's not the case with Reid. With Smart, I think it's trickier because his name's already out there. But I still think, call me crazy, especially if Reid is back. It has nothing to do with connection to Wade and everything that's come out. Especially if Reid comes back. This team had a team win over Vandy. I don't care how bad they are. They circled the wagons and they kicked the you-know-what out of an SEC team. Something tells me this team is about to win more ball games in March. That's just a gut feel. So I know the dark clouds are hovering, but I don't think it means that their season is over or that they're doomed. I don't believe that at all, in fact. All right, let's get out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Amos, enough of me. What say you?
Hey, man, I'm just making this call right now. I'm LSU through and through, whether it's from lacrosse to gymnastics. But I'm kind of confused right now because I've been looking at basketball, football, college throughout the year, collegiate football. And I've been watching scandals pop up right when the team is at a pinnacle of doing something big. And I'm not understanding why it's like information coming out 3 and 4 years later from somewhere else down the line. And I know the NCAA had no love. It's just Dale Brown. They had no love for LSU basketball. So I'm just trying to figure out how can all of a sudden these charges be brought up or implications be brought up, and all of a sudden the coach is on the hot seat, the team is in limbo, because they need their coach for this stretch. Thank you.
You got it. Amos, you're not wrong. And that's another thing I addressed in the weekly reboot podcast. I'll bring it to the show now. We got time for more calls. 706-0111. I did what we know and what I think as part of that podcast. That was part of what we know. You shouldn't doubt that. Someone or someones is out to get LSU. You don't have to start playing the rock well. Yeah, somebody is watching LSU and they don't like what they see. Fact, this is very synonymous to the Hugh Freeze situation in Oxford. It is. I told you that last week. I know that we're not looking at Bible-thumping escorts from Will Wade. That detail aside, it is the same, with possibly one exception. And Amos, this is where I can't exonerate Will Wade based on the facts that I have now. If it changes, I'll own it. But right now, what's being reported, hearing Wade, reading transcripts of Wade, it's pretty clear to me, and this lines up with what I've been hearing for a year and a half about Will Wade, is that he wasn't very careful when he first got to LSU. And for the love of all that's holy, get up off the phone, bro. Get off the phone. And so, Amos, part of it, I think, is his own doing, right? The decisions to communicate the way he did, to deal with the different people and handlers, a la a Christian Dawkins that he did. Part of it's on him, in my opinion. But the other part of it, you just hit on. It's not a coincidence that the subpoena report came out right after LSU beat Tennessee. It's not a coincidence that this Yahoo Sports report came out right after LSU won at Florida and virtually secured at least a share of the SEC regular season title. It's absolutely not a coincidence. LSU is too new money. It happened too quickly. It stinks a little too much for some out there that have the power to make sure the information gets in, depending on how you look at it, the right or the wrong hands, if you catch my drift. All right, CD, you taking calls over there. We got another one?
It was just more Amos. He wanted just the question that he really wanted to ask was, why now? Why are we getting this?
Okay, let me make this clear. Everybody has been asking me, Ben, this is just terrible. It's crappy. How could it finally be happening now that we're good? It's only happening because LSU is good. That's what I'm trying to tell you. If they got all these recruits, a la Ben Simmons, Antonio Blakeney, Brandon Sampson, to join an already talented team, and then they wet the bed, nobody's calling the FBI or the NCAA then. It's only happening because LSU is a borderline elite team. That's the whole point. All right, we got a big show today. I got to throw it to our first break. Ross Dellinger coming aboard, SportsIllustratedSI.com. He's been all over this story, and he'll join us at 4:30. At 5:15, Ruff and Rodri. I'll corroborate the Gordy Rush parking lot race story that we heard on Friday from Gordy Rush. Ruffin, that story's coming at you. 5:15, big fella. And then at 5:30, former UL Raging Cajun baseball player Jace Conrad. And the champ is here at 6:15. Chad Porcio, head basketball coach of the Brobridge Tigers. They did something incredible on Friday night. I can't wait to talk all about it with Chad Porcio. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. We'll be right back in on 103.7 The Game.
Winners eat nachos at a ball game and snag a foul ball barehanded without getting a drop of cheese on their shirt. Winners ride home with Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Right back in. I got a couple of questions. Looking for your calls and your answers. This is B2BS. That's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. At this point, you know, Will Wade not coaching LSU. Tony Benford on the SEC teleconference saying that to the best of his knowledge, from what he's been told, he plans to be the head coach for the entirety of the SEC tournament. That'll inform our first question. But I got a second for you, and let me set that up now. I know, it's March 11th. Right in the middle and the thick of one of the juiciest basketball stories in a hot minute, not just locally but nationwide. We've got LSU UL baseball, but the good folks at Bet Online released their over-under win totals for college football next year. I'll just give you LSU's because it's relevant to the question that's coming at you. 9, regular season win total, over-under of 9. Keep that in mind. All right, let's get to the music.
Love, exciting and new.
Your sink or swim question of the day, part one. Will LSU basketball win the SEC tournament this weekend? Crossing over sporting lines, part two. Will LSU go over or under its projected 2019 season win total on the gridiron? Of course, if you look on Twitter, as Clint's posting these questions right now, you will find a third option for that football over-under. Naturally, they could push, right? Over 9, under 9, or push right at 9. Whatever you think, give us a call. Let us know. 706-0111. I'll start with part one. I would lean toward no. I would lean toward sink. They absolutely can win the SEC tournament. That first game we know Friday at noon will either be against Florida, who LSU played two nail biters against, or Arkansas, who LSU played, you know, two nail biters against. LSU split with both Florida and Arkansas, beating both on the road, losing to both at home. The good news in this scenario, game's not going to be played in the PMAC. The news that we don't know yet is whether or not Javonte Smart and Naz Reid will be available. We think for different reasons, but we don't know that, as I suggested in the opening segment. Until I know if LSU's playing with their full complement, their full deck, I'm not co-signing them doing something that the program basically never does. This has been a very, very difficult tournament for LSU to navigate just throughout the history of the program. So I'm going to say no here. I'm going to sink. But I still believe LSU at this point, if it wins one game in Nashville, and even only one, if they lose in the semis on Saturday, I think LSU gets a two seed. I know that they're ranked ninth right now, the latest polls that came out. I think LSU finds its way to the two line with at least one win. If they lose Friday against either Florida or Arkansas, you might have to sweat it out as a three seed. As far as the other question, LSU football, over under nine. It's early as hell, and I admit that. But give me the over here. And this is regular season only. But LSU last year was a couple of blown calls in College Station from winning 10 games in the regular season. This year, they don't have to play Georgia. This year, they're not playing Miami. I think the schedule gets a little bit more conducive this time around. Returning quarterback, a lot of talented returning pieces on defense. Early first glance look, give me the over. All right, let's get out now to the ARDCO Equipment Hotline. Chad, you want to go in on one or both of those?
Ben, I really don't care if they win the SEC tournament. I think regardless, they're going to be a 2 or 3 seed regardless. I think Kentucky, automatically, I think they're going to have the first seed. Ben, I don't want to say you got me confused, man, but two weeks ago you were singing a different tune. You're saying they weren't even going to go after Wade. They were after bigger fish, and now that the social media and everybody, it's a big story, now Wade, there's not even evidence that he's done anything yet. He cooperated. He's had both statements in October and last week that said he did nothing wrong. Now we're throwing the book at him, man. Just get your comments on that, dude. Thank you.
And look, Chad, respectfully, my tune on this has never wavered. What I told you then is, yes, they were going to use Wade and Sean Miller to go after bigger fish for wire fraud, and they still are. Everything that's happened after that, wiretaps getting released, is trying to damage LSU's season that's in the making. That's the reason that this stuff is getting released as it is. People weren't going to let well enough alone and just wait until April 22nd for Wade Miller to potentially hang themselves and in the process, their program. So understand what I'm saying here. Nothing's changed for me. I think Wade has had his hands in the mud with this. Whether or not he was going to be allowed to get to April 22nd by some of these reports coming out, how could I have known that a couple weeks ago? I just figured that LSU would continue a landmark season and that after the year was over, once it got to April 22nd, even though they're using Wade and Miller, here's my biggest point. Here's what it's always been, Chad. The NC2A can use everything that's admitted into the FBI trial. The issue, like we've kind of talked about, between then and now, the subpoena report has come out, the Yahoo Sports report has come out, and all of it has forced the hand of LSU a little bit sooner. Now LSU, if they're not doing their due diligence, I mean, they're screwed. They had to ask Wade to come in after Thursday's report. He has refused to come in. Suspended. End of story. I don't blame Oliva and F. King Alexander and the Board of Supervisors for doing that. I always had issue with how genuine the win part of it seemed, right? You knew in October this had a chance to be bad. You weren't blindsided last week. That is BS. That's my issue with Oliva and the powers that be on this one. But I've never wavered. They're using him to get to a bigger fish for wire fraud, but in the process of using him, he can say things that hang him and LSU out on a line the NCAA can use what the FBI gives them. That's what I've been telling you for weeks now. All right, let's get back to the ARDCO Equipment Hotline. Andrew, what you got for me?
Well, let's start with the easy one. That's the football over-under. I would say that's an over, and it better be an over, given the recruiting classes, schedule, and all the returning pieces. On the LSU basketball, I'm going to tell you that I think that they at least get to the championship game, and I think they got a chance to win it no matter who they play, whether that's Tennessee or UK, because I think after if you watch the Vanderbilt game, I think the team is in full FU mode to everybody.
Agreed.
And that they are going to play to their highest ability at the right time because of what's being done to them. I'll also, too, give you another nugget from somebody that I trust who told me I would expect that Javonte Smart will be playing in the tournament. I was told by someone I know that the FBI has actually interviewed his mother and that they have squat in terms of anything on them. So I think once LSU is done with theirs, I think to fully expect an announcement that Smart will play. Now, does that happen? Who knows? Because, quite frankly, we got a clown running the show right now, and they're all running around doing stupid things with our program. But if what I'm being told is true, I would expect Smart to play this weekend. And with him, they're going to go in full FU mode.
Right. I appreciate it, Andrew. And, look, we'll see if that comes to bear. That would be manna from the heavens from a basketball X's and O's standpoint. Without Smart, LSU might devolve into a little more Trey and Pray than is required from a balance standpoint. So with Smart back, I don't think they have to go down that road quite as much. We appreciate the calls. Coming right back, bringing Ross Dellinger with us. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Jackson Will.
He's to the 10, the 5, touchdown!
Gridiron debates never go out of style on Bumper to Bumper Sports.
Well, I had never thought of it that way.
But feel free to be right anytime you're ready to start on 103.7 The Game.
Have been told otherwise. We're just in here today preparing myself and the other coaches, Coach Fire and Armstrong, and have been told otherwise that we were, you know, that I'm not going to be. So we'll just prepare that, like we are, like we did going into the Vandy game, and just get prepared for prepare our guys for the tournament.
That is Tony Benford. If he's not going to be coaching the SEC tournament, nobody's told him that so far. Bumper to Bumper Sports, right back in on 103.7 The Game. Let's head down to Baton Rouge. Aboard the ARDCO Equipment Hotline, he has been all over this story, as he usually is. It's Ross Dellinger, Sports Illustrated, SI.com. How are you, Ross?
Good, Ben. How you doing?
I'm doing well. And before we get into the mechanics of this whole thing, what you've been reporting, give me a bit of a scene setter from the other night and just how surreal that atmosphere was inside the PMAC.
Yeah, it was strange. And the only thing I can really relate it to, compare it to, is that 2015 LSU Texas A&M football game with the Save Less game and the Fire Joe Oliva game. It was eerily similar to that one. More intimate, obviously. The environment was we had a roof on our head, obviously, and there was a fewer people there. But it was just as emotional, probably, and just as strange and bizarre. It really was. It was crazy. You had, a student section and other fans. That's the thing. It wasn't all the student section. They were leading stuff, no doubt. But, man, I mean, I saw some 60, 70-year-old men and women that were up, had the signs, booing, throwing some fingers around toward Joe Oliva. It was a lot of people in there that were seemed to be angry at the athletic director and chanting for a coach who, was suspended and caught on FBI wiretaps. It was bizarre. And then, of course, it all ended with confetti falling and nets being cut down, including, Javonte Smart, a player who was withheld from the game for possible eligibility issues, getting a little piece of the net. It was crazy. It was.
I know that most people listening have read your reports, but I want to go through the series of events, Ross. So take me from the time the Yahoo Sports report comes out on Thursday until LSU announces Friday the indefinite suspension of Wade. What's your understanding of everything that transpired internally for LSU and for Wade?
Yeah, you know, I don't remember exactly what time the report came out, maybe mid to late morning. And by that early afternoon, there was mobilization down at LSU's administration tower. And in the board office, the LSU Board of Supervisors office, there was a lot of stuff going on as soon as Thursday afternoon. So I knew Thursday night there was an internal investigation started. We didn't report anything because there was just some – I just wanted some more details. And then, of course, that Friday morning they asked, I believe it was that Friday morning, you know, they asked Will to come in. And when I say they, you know, this is a group of people. It's not Joe Oliva or it's not just F. King. It's F. King and Joe Oliva and probably some board members, specifically the chairman, James Williams. And they wanted answers. And he decided not to come in, citing his counsel advising him not to do it. And from there, you know, I think they felt hamstrung. I mean, you know, any employer, if you're an employee and you do something that might put your employer at risk, and your employer, your boss has asked you to come in and answer some questions about it, and you lawyer up and say, you know, refuse to, they're kind of hamstrung. I mean, you're either probably going to get fired or suspended. So LSU obviously suspended him later that afternoon, and then you know, there were interviews conducted Friday with Javonte Smart, and I think everything went well there. It sounds like LSU is really happy how Smart and his mother have cooperated. I believe they're interviewing or have interviewed his mother again today, by the way. And they're happy with the cooperation. And I don't want to say they cleared him. That's kind of a strong term. But they were happy with, I guess, his interview and their interview. But they need to clear him, you need some other interviews. You know, you need Will Wade. You need a third party. You need some other people. You need to do a kind of a full scale thing. So, you know, when other people didn't talk, namely Will Wade, Saturday morning, I got word early Saturday morning late morning that Javonte was not going to play, that they just can't risk it because they didn't get everybody's cooperation in order to kind of exonerate him. And then of course we had the game, you know, Sunday, I think there were, you know, more stuff happened Sunday involving maybe Will Wade and his attorneys a little bit. Maybe there was just some very light communication, I've heard a little bit. And then today they were, you know, picking back up on the investigation, specifically with Javonte's mother, from what I understand. And here we are.
Well, and I guess that leads me to my next question, Ross. To the best of your understanding, is it all internal? And when I ask that, what I really mean is, has LSU been in contact with the NCAA, the FBI, or have either of those entities come to Baton Rouge or tried to speak with Javonte, his mother, Will Wade, or is all that absent at this point?
Well, I do not believe the FBI is involved. It would be surprising to me if LSU didn't reach out to the FBI and ask for materials, but they're going to deny them materials. You know, the FBI doesn't, they've probably purposely leaked these things to media members for a reason. They're not going to leak things to schools until their investigation is complete. But I don't think they're involved. The NCAA certainly is involved. And LSU made that clear, I think, in their statement Friday. They're involved. From what I understand, they're here, or at least have a conference call kind of presence here. But it seems like LSU is kind of leading their own thing in conjunction, you know, with the NCAA and stuff. That's how I understand it.
What local fans will want to know is what has to transpire for Will Wade to get back on that sideline. And look, I think they want him right now. I know that. But just ever for him to get back on that sideline, what has to happen?
he's got to talk. You know, he's got to answer questions from his bosses. And of course, those answers probably have to be accepted, if you will, by his bosses. But from what I understand, just Will talking to them and agreeing to talk to them and answering some of their questions, that could be enough to clear him, I think. And for whatever reason, he doesn't, you know, his lawyers and him don't want to do it. So it's funny. I don't know if his answers are as important as him willing to do it. Now, I will say the fact that he won't do it should tell you that the answers potentially could be bad. So that's probably a good sign. So I don't know. It's tricky, man. You get the feeling from talking to people that Javonte is going to be potentially cleared well before Will. But it's weird because in order for Javonte to be cleared, you might have to get some testimony from Will, or certainly testimony from the handler, the third party that Will mentioned on the transcript.
And to your point earlier, one of those two is talking, and it seems to be going better for him. So that would make a lot of sense. We're coming down the stretch right now. Ross Dellinger joining us on 103.7 The Game. And so now LSU entering kind of this weird territory, right, where they're making an SEC tournament run. It's been asked on the program. I've kind of wondered aloud myself, can you verify that whatever was going on with Naz Reid has nothing to do with this investigation?
Yeah, from what I have to say, I'll have a disclaimer here like I did on a couple of shows earlier. You know, I haven't covered this team all season. I mean, I kind of swooped in. I was a local beat writer for so long, and I always hated when the national guys would swoop in on these big stories, and I'd be like, hey, you know, you haven't been here the whole time. Well, here I am doing it. I mean, it's been about – I've been on, you know, probably 2 weeks now, but specifically last only 3 days. So from all I understand is that he did really suffer a concussion. That's my understanding of it. You know, I haven't really dug too much into it. I know that there's I'm sure there's – some rumors out there and stuff, but from what I understand, it is injury related. And I've been out of my house today. I didn't even see what Tony Benford said today. I know he was asked about it, but I know that after the game, Tony acted like, oh, he'll definitely be back, you know, Tuesday when we start practice.
Anything that would lead you to believe that Wade's legal counsel changes their stance on this?
Probably not. I really don't know because, nobody over there that side is talking much either. But, I'll say this. When a coach watches a game, watches his team that he's built and crafted for 2 years, and, you know, he loves these players, and Will Wade sit on the couch or wherever and watch that game on Saturday, I'm sure there was a feeling of I've got to get back out there some way. And so there's always that, you know. It's just, you know, when you hire a legal team, they don't think like that. And that's probably why you hire them. And they say don't talk, you know, because of these reasons. You know, honestly, if Will Wade's smart, because this involves the FBI and all, he probably won't talk. So I would be a little surprised if they kind of change their mind. But I won't be shocked, you know. I won't be shocked because I'm sure Will wants to get back out there, you know, and he's probably going to try to work with them in a way that somehow can get him back on the court.
He is Ross Dellinger with Sports Illustrated, and he's very much earned his way to being the national guy that could swoop in from time to time. Ross, you're doing great work, my friend. Keep it up.
All right, Ben. Thanks, y'all.
You got to love it. There's a lot, I think, that he said there we can discuss on the other side. I'm glad to hear what he has to say about Naz Reid. But he's not quite in Lloyd Christmas territory yet. It's not one in a million talk. He thinks it might be a little more possible for Wade to get back. But eventually, somebody's going to have to talk. All right, we're going to take our final break of the hour. When we return, we'll take more of your phone calls, and I'll let you know what's going on with the NFL's legal tampering period. Yes, that's a real thing, and it kicked off today. And it means big bucks for a former LSU Tiger, in part. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. We'll be right back in on 103.7 The Game.
show won't protect your quarterback or cover downfield, but it's got animal control down pat.
Oh, if you see a possum, try to kill it, okay? It's not a pet.
Back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
All the money, yes, all of it, for Quan Alexander. I'll tell you about that and plenty more that's going on in the world of the NFL. Detroit Lions, Oakland, soon to be Vegas Raiders, stockpiling players. The New England Patriots giving them away. Pretty standard fare. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, right back in on 103.7 The Game. And it's really one of the dumbest things. NFL free agency kicks off on Wednesday, but the legal tampering period begins today, which means negotiations and reported deals are flowing, which makes you wonder, why not just start free agency today? I'll quickly run down some of the headlines, then we'll take a call. Quan Alexander going from Tampa to the San Francisco 49ers, and as I heard a baseball player whose name I just can't remember today, but as I heard a baseball player, I think it might have been Pat Burrell, CD, that just came to me mid-show. As he said back in the day when he was traded from Tampa to Oakland, I'm just taking it one bay at a time. Quan Alexander, 4 years, $54 million, half of it, $27 million is guaranteed. He tore his ACL October the 21st. Reports are that Tampa wasn't going to go any higher than $10 million a year, and now he's getting 4 years, $54 million. I'll get to some of the other players, including a few Saints Nuggets, in a moment. But right now, out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. T, what you got today?
Hey, Ben. Just want to answer your sink and swim question. First of all, I'm like one of your previous callers. We better win more than 9 games in football. And basketball, I won't answer that question until I know if Javonte Smart and Naz Reid will be playing. Because if they don't play, no. If they do play, I think we have a pretty good chance of winning that tournament.
They were the best team in the regular season for a reason. You're absolutely right. So if they have everybody and a little bit of that us against the world mentality, yeah, they've got more than just a bunch of chance.
Ben,
go ahead.
But can I throw a little shade?
Sure.
Your previous guest you had on, Ross Dellinger, I'm throwing shade at Matt Schick because he interviewed Ross Dellinger yesterday morning.
I heard about it.
And throughout the whole interview, he called him Sam. No, we got to – now, isn't he a professional that works for ESPN, correct?
Well, those two things aren't always one and the same. Yes, he works for ESPN. Okay. I don't know Matt Schick personally, so I shouldn't say that he's not a professional. But let's just say that not everybody who works for the mothership is a professional.
Okay, good deal. Hey, bro, love your show, man. Keep it up, Ed.
T, you got it. Hey, he called him Sam. You know what? Maybe the shade is at me. Maybe I should have found just some awful, way off the beaten path name.
Yeah.
Thanks to our guy, Billy Dellinger.
I mean, that would have been great. Just a fusion of Billy and Body and Ross Dellinger.
Ross really has been all over this, but yeah. I heard about that. Guy called him Sam straight up for quite some time. I guess we could go ahead and just add this out there as well. I did an interview, like I said, with Barrett Salee yesterday. He and Tom Brennan. Former college basketball head coach, and I think for most of the interview, my good friend Barrett described me as being with 103.7 in Baton Rouge. So, you know, hey, maybe West Baton Rouge, you know, Gross Tet, let me holler at you. But I don't know about going over that Mississippi River Bridge there. I'm not quite certain that you're getting us there unless you're streaming on the mobile app or on the .com. But look, Maringouin, Gross Tet. We're peoples.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's about as far as we can get out in that area. At least heading eastbound. I know we can probably we get well.
Thank
out,
you for yeah. reminding me that would only be going eastbound.
Yeah.
Yes. That.
Yeah.
You're muted for 5 minutes. Let me finish this segment. We're going back to the NFL. Yes, Gross Tet and Maringouin are still, in fact, east of here. But let's get to the big dealings of the day. Speaking of east of here, Landon Collins from Dutchtown has told ESPN's Josina Anderson. Now she is a pro. That he'll be signing with the Washington Redskins. Reports that have flown after 6 years, $84 million, 45 of that is guaranteed. How about Lando going to a division rival of the New York Giants? A lot of activity for the Detroit Lions. Defensive back Justin Coleman signed today for, or it's reported he'll sign, 4 years, $36 million. It'll make him the highest paid nickelback in NFL history. That's an interesting note about how important that position has become in the league. $9 million a year to play the slot as a nickelback. Danny Amendola also joining the Detroit Lions. 1 year, $4.5 million deal. And, of course, he has familiarity with head coach Matt Patricia, who used to be with the New England Patriots, as was Trey Flowers. More Patricia picking off Belichick's tree. Defensive end Trey Flowers going from the Pats to the Lions, 5 years, estimated about $16.5 million per season for Trey Flowers. Impressive. And your big news from over the weekend, frankly, I think this is literally what set off daylight savings time. It was so late. The Oakland Raiders went out and got Antonio Brown. 3 years, a shade over $50 million. $30 million of that is guaranteed. They weren't done there. Today, Chucky, the Raiders, went out and got left tackle Trent Brown, also from the New England Patriots. 4 years, $66 million. That'll make Trent Brown the highest annual paid offensive lineman in the NFL. So it's not the biggest deal in terms of the total dollars, but in terms of annual value, it is. And then one that was, I think, pretty well anticipated, but just solidified right before Clint and I started the show. Nick Foles, Super Bowl MVP 2 years ago, is the new quarterback for the Jacksonville Jaguars. 4 years, $88 million. A little more than 50 of that is guaranteed. Blake Bortles, you need a new job, almost certainly. Let's get to some of those Saints tie-ins. The Saints have agreed to terms with linebacker Craig Robertson. It's a 2-year extension. And how about this for a former Saint? Kenny Vaccaro getting a 4-year, $26 million deal, 11.5 of that guaranteed with the Tennessee Titans. So that 1-year chance that they took on him seems to be paying off for franchise and for player. But another note that's interesting, according to a report this morning, the Saints were the second tightest team to the cap in all the NFL. So don't expect to see Mickey Loomis, Jeff Ireland, and company with too much to say during this free agency period. They just don't have a lot of wiggle room. At this point, neither do we. We're just about smack dab out of time. CD, how about one final word?
What's up, Acadiana? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Boys. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Heavenly. And I think this must be said in the first hour of the show. Lost in the shuffle of all the politics, the scandal, the angst, the anger, lost in all of that was a moment that was heavenly in the PMAC late Saturday night when the parents of Wade Sims were able to cut down the nets and take that atmosphere in and all the adulation and the love that they were receiving from LSU Nation. So to Wayne and to Faye Sims, that had to have been a heavenly moment. That's the final word of this hour, and it's brought to you by the Village Station. They're your final stop to fill the stomach and tank as you head home on Maurice Avenue. Coming right back, plenty more Bumper to Bumper Sports on the way on 103.7 The Game.
We interrupt our regular programming for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now,
let's get started.
We are off and running. Hour 2 of 3 underway. Ben Love joined by the famous Clint D. And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 103.7 The Game. For the next 2 hours, we got you, bringing you home from inside the 237 Roof Studios. Remember, no job too big or too small. Just call Lafayette Roofing, 237-7663. We'll go back in. LSU, Will Wade, reset where we are. What's coming next? I want to jump into the Bet Online over-under win totals. I gave you LSU's I didn't share some of the more prominent schools in the SEC and from around the country what Vegas thinks of their 2019 football prospects. And don't forget, we got Ruffin Rodrigue in our next segment, Jace Conrad, the segment after that. So you want to get a call in, you might want to do so right now. 706-0111. In fact, we got a couple of questions up that you can answer. Our sink or swim questions. Part one, will LSU basketball win the SEC tournament this weekend? Part two, will LSU go over or under that 9-win projected total in football this season? Clint, quickly, what's Twitter saying on both counts?
With LSU basketball, it's actually a pretty even race right now. 53% are saying sink right now, 47 swim. And then when you look at the over-under projected win total, 81% going over. I don't blame them, honestly.
And that's exactly where I was in hour number one. Whenever you're ready, let us know what you think. 706-0111. And since we've been weighed LSU heavy, as you probably expect, let's actually lead with some of the football. 9 for LSU, 9 for Florida. A couple of potentially parallel programs that were defensively dominant, couldn't innovate on offense, couldn't find a quarterback. And now all of a sudden, with new head coaches, one elevated as an interim at Ogeron, the other taken from Starkville, suddenly LSU and Florida on other sides of the dividing line in the SEC expected to do some fairly big things. Elsewhere in the SEC, Alabama's at 11, Georgia at 10.5. After that, it is LSU and Florida next in line at 9. You've got Mississippi State at 8 and Texas A&M at 7.5. And I've seen so much chatter with this subject today on social media. Look out for all that Aggie fan money, Vegas, because it's coming. And I would give you a bit of a Lee Corso there. I think Texas A&M is a program that is on the rise. There's really not a doubt in my mind. But that schedule's brutal, and I mean brutal this year. Clemson, Bama, LSU, Georgia, it's going to be tough in year two for Texas A&M under Jimbo Fisher to really, really take that next step. I'll give you some of the other numbers later. Right now, let's get out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Ken, have you cooled off at all from Friday? It's okay if you haven't. I just want to know if you have.
A little bit. it's like I said, bittersweet. They won the title, so I'm happy about that. LSU, that's 11 wins in football. Maybe 12. Could beat Alabama. But I'm going to say 11 wins. If Smart and Reed plays, then I like LSU chances to win the tournament championship as well.
And I'm going to touch on that as soon as we get to LSU hoops. Ken, you know I appreciate the call.
All right, thank you.
In fact, we want to take some more whenever you're ready. 706-0111. I'll just throw out a couple of the other non-SEC teams so you get some flavor of this. This is all via Bet Online. Clemson, like Alabama, is at 11. Georgia's the only team I see right now at 10.5. I'm sorry, check that. Oklahoma at 10.5. New quarterback, who cares? They won the Heisman, they'll win 10 or 11 games. It's what they do. The teams that are at 10, Ohio State, UCF, come on now, Washington. You slip down to the 9.5 line, Michigan, Notre Dame, Oregon, and those Hook'em Longhorns of Texas. Very interesting there. We'll discuss more of this as we get on with the program, but right now I got to get on to another call. Let's get back out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. We've got, let's see here, Ron is with us. He wants to talk LSU and Pels. Hit us, Ron.
Yeah, Ben, I just wanted to comment on your previous caller. I'm thinking LSU looks like about an 11-win team next year. Possibly undefeated, give or take, an Alabama game. But looking at the schedule and what other teams will be dealing with, I mean, I could see LSU 11-1 season. So, and my comment is that just looking at what's going on with the Lakers, with Ingram, with the blood clot, I think they're just about to save us some heartache not trading Anthony Davis when he did.
You are absolutely right about that. And by the way, that team that he didn't want to play for, the Pels, they don't have too different of a record from those Lakers at this point either. Thank you, Ron. We appreciate it. Let's get back out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Tim wants to go in on our sink or swim question. Tim, you want to go in on both or just one?
Yeah, I'll go in on both of them for you. First off, I think regardless of if Najee and Javonte Smart play, watching the way them boys was playing the first half of that game, I think they could still win that title. But on the second part of that, I'm gonna go ahead and tell Clint to push the button on record. LSU's gonna win 12 games this year. So I got my Kool-Aid stirring, so just go ahead and mark it down. They're gonna win 12 games and they're going to the night.
You were
I'm
right.
Hang up, man, I gotta get out of here, buddy.
I understand, brother. You were right last time around, and Clint is over there hitting the record button. 12-0 is a tall task. I'm not telling you anything is impossible. I'm going to give you the Kevin Garnett. Nothing's it. Okay, yeah, I'm not doing that. But even during the Nick Saban era, LSU beginning the golden era, clearly, even during Nick Saban's time at LSU, the Tigers had one season of one loss. They won a national championship. Every other year, every other one, LSU lost at least three games. Even the year they won the SEC championship, 2001, LSU lost three games. That 12-0 season is just so freaking elusive. Now, I know it happened in 2011. In fact, so did 13-0, and then 14-0 did not. To Tim's first point, that LSU can win the SEC tournament without Reed and without Smart, disagree. That's too tall of a task. But over the last hour, we've heard nothing but potentially positive news about the chances of Javonte Smart being reinstated. And after all, Wade won't talk to him. I know you may not agree with me. They had no choice but to suspend the cat. They had no choice. He wouldn't talk to his employer who he's putting in peril. I just don't see how there's a divide there. But there is a choice with Smart. And they've used the phrase, what, abundance, overabundance of caution. If they talk to Smart, his mom, they're in conversation with the NC2A, and they feel good pulling that trigger, then I support them. And also over the last hour, I think we've all come to a bit of an understanding that, yeah, Naz Reid, this is legitimately an injury and that this isn't something that if you were to be skeptical, and I was kind of wondering aloud myself to begin the show, I don't mind telling you, just wondering why is Reid sitting all of a sudden at the same time that Smart is, but doesn't look like there are any dots to connect there. And certainly for LSU's SEC tourney and beyond chances, that is nothing but good news. All right, CD, who do we have that wants to come and play in the sandbox?
We got James, and then we got Jacob right after that.
Let's take him, then I got to hit a break. To the Ardco Equipment Hotline, James, you're up first.
Okay, real quick, LSU fans need to stop with all this whining and belly aching, because if this were Kentucky in the same situation in basketball, they'd be crying for the coach's head. If this were Alabama in football in the same situation, they'd be crying for Saban's head. So they need to stop with all that. Congrats to Brobridge on their state championship in basketball. And that is it.
You're going to hear from Chad Porcio at 6:15. Thanks for the call, James. Quickly, back out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Jacob, I got about a minute, and it's yours.
How's it going, Ben? I just want to talk about the Tigers in the SEC tournament. Yeah, I mean, they have that weird statistics where they don't necessarily lose on the road. And guess where they're not going to be playing for the next week? They're not going to be playing on the road. Oh, they're not going to be playing at home. Sorry.
Right.
So I definitely think they have a shot to take it. And I believe they got the draw the South Carolina getting the 4 seed, correct?
Yes. They're going to have to go through either Florida or Arkansas before that, but I think you are correct.
That's a big deal, man. I think that's a great draw. And Vegas had the resume a little bit before hopefully upsetting one of Tennessee and Kentucky in the finals. Now, on towards football, yeah, I mean, they definitely – they're going to be favored in every single game, even besides Alabama, of course. I think the Texas game is going to be a bit of a difficult spot. The unfriendly confines, and by that I mean they're going to be sticking the Tiger band, the upper deck, low allotment on tickets to the visiting fan base. But they also have, I believe, Georgia Southern the week before, which would, in most cases, would be a patsy, a kind of a cupcake schedule, a little bit of a bye week. That's a tough team, man. A triple option team beating up your defensive line the week before, not a big fan of that. So I wish they would stop scheduling triple option teams.
That's fair. And I love the scouting report on what LSU's going into in Austin. I got to hit a break. Great opening segment of Hour 2. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. Coming right back with Ruff and Rodri on 103.7 The Game. Hey, that's our cue. Right back at it. You're listening to Bumper Sports live on 103.7 The Game. And it is time for Ruffin Rodrigue, owner of Ruffino's on the River. How are you, Ruffin?
Oh, doing fantastic. I'm sure you're having a lot more fireworks than I'm having right now on your show with all the craziness this weekend.
All right, let's see here. We are 77 minutes in. I think we have taken 10 calls, and that includes a 12-minute interview with Ross Dellinger. So pretty busy, yeah.
Yeah, I've tried to just not listen because, you know, it's such a complicated situation what's going on with the FBI and the LSU. And let me guess, Ben, 9 out of the 10 callers are for, you know, Coach Wade and keep, you know, and want the administrator to take more responsibility.
A lot of pro Wade and a lot of embarrassed, disappointed, frustrated with the administration, yes.
Yeah. Well, I think maybe this comes from Joe's mishaps or whatever happened at Duke Lacrosse, the Duke Lacrosse scandal, which is just one of the biggest black eyes in the history of sports, when those kids were completely innocent and just ruined their lives. And she's gun shy, probably. I mean, that's the only thing I can think. The FBI was involved in that case too, and the and I guess that's what, you know, there's enough evidence. I don't know why they did. Why would they do something that fast, that quick before the last game, senior night, where, you know, he had a relationship with Wade Sims. He wanted to be there for that. I thought that was, you know, I mean, just could have played that one last game and then you know, considered it, but. Either they had a ear from the NCAA that said something to them. I try to stay – when it comes to stuff like this, Ben, I really stay out because of the high-profile restaurants and all that. I don't allow any of that kind of stuff going on in my places. And it's a – you know, it's a – the AAU started it with their middlemen years ago, I remember, even in football. Remember Greg Robinson from Thibodeau? You know, big offensive tackle, went to Auburn. He had a middleman, and it was just a, you know, the NCAA investigated me because his coach bought him dinner at my restaurant.
Wow.
It was his high school coach. I thought high school coaches would buy the players dinner. I didn't know. It was a weird interview. Outside of the NCAA girl being just smoking hot, it was a pretty boring interview.
Well, but, I'm going to tell you this, Ruffin. I don't want to drag you down into that muck then, but I'll ask you a big picture question. Just from your understanding of how the Board of Supervisors works and the complications with all the different egos and thoughts in that room, does that maybe kind of inform why this has been a little hairy, right? The handling of it, the decision-making, the timing, because you have Board of Supervisors that tell F. King Alexander what to do, and then he tells Joe Oliva.
Look, we got a new governor. We all know that, you know, it's the first Democratic governor. Everybody, you know, Louisiana is as red a state as you can get. And then, you know, John Bel Air was slipped in there because of a faulty scandal with Vitter. And you know, he put himself out there as a moderate. But, man, he has put on – and, I don't really get into politics, but a lot of the Board of Supervisors in LSU are trial attorneys. And I got a lot of friends of the trial attorneys, but you can't have that many. You know, and the only really football background is Remy Starnes, who was a walk-on when I was playing at LSU. He's a trial attorney to walk. Now, Remy's a good guy, and he's a fight for athletics, and he, you know. But, you know, where's the I don't think I say that on air, the NADs. Where's the guy? Who's the leader? Do we have a leader? Is F. King a leader? I think Joe Oliva at times showed some great leadership over the years. I don't know if F. King has. With the whole mess, Les Miles debacle. I don't think he cares about athletics from what I hear. I just really think that it's you know, Will Wade did something, obviously, if it's on tape and, you know, proving whatever. But then you got on national media, Marcus Spears is going off. You know, and it's just they pounce on when they don't know if the facts are what's going on. You know, this is an investigation. Let it play it out. Let it play itself out, and then so. I don't know. It's, you know, they got Patino, they got all the other coaches. He's bad money, and I think maybe because he's the only one that was wiretapped. You haven't heard of anybody else.
It's him and him and the coach from Arizona, Sean Miller, are going to be subpoenaed for the FBI trial that we know of so far.
Okay, yeah, and then Will's a bigger deal because he's a number two seed and a possible number one seed if they run the table in the. In a tournament, which they, you know, they can do. All they have to do is win two games, and they win the SEC tournament. They may be one seed.
Oh, I think that's absolutely still at play. If they win these games, especially because here's the other thing people forget: they play Sunday at noon. If they make it to the championship, that game ends what? Maybe like 2:45, 3:00. Sunday at 5:00 is the announcement, right? So they're one of the last games that's played. One of the freshest things in their mind, and if they finish off. What would be a run of what? Let's see. They went 16-2 in league play. I mean, Ruffin, they'd be 19-2 in their last 21 games against league competition.
Yeah, and after going 2 years ago, 0-2 and 17 or whatever, you know, and that's what everybody's saying. Yeah, of course. Look, you know, Nick Saban went to the national championship game in what 2 years or three, whatever it was, or he went from 2-and-whatever to. In 2 years, he was a national championship contender with no talent when he got there. You know, Les Miles left a lot of talent. But how do you think Nick got there? Through just great coach and just trained the guys and, you know, worked harder than everybody else? No. You get the best players the way everybody gets the best player. And, you know, they got to get a system. And Dale Brown's been saying this forever. We've got to find some way to compensate these players to where they don't have to go do this. And it's not only the players, the families. It's the families that want the money because they're lower income, maybe some in poverty level, and they worked hard. Or some their grandsons worked hard, and you know they want to get paid. I heard Dwayne's great, but at his draft party, we were over at some big beer distributor, and I was with his financial advisor, a buddy of mine, and Dwayne's just sitting up there on a cell phone, and I guess he gets drafted in the first round. But before that, he it was like four or five picks, and he didn't get drafted. Man, his grandmother came over to that financial agent, sitting next to me, she goes, "When am I getting paid?" And I was like, "What?" She said, "I want my money." I went, "Oh man!" Whew. I said, "Dwayne, you have to have a little posse to pay off." But that's family. So money just screws up everything like that. And I wish we could find a way to compensate these kids. I mean, I can remember Tony Moss and Victor Jones, guys that you know really didn't have a whole lot coming to me. You know, my dad was he made a good living and. I was able to help. Tony Moss come ask me for money for washing his clothes. You know, they didn't give us anything, and except a scholarship, which is a lot and all that. But we couldn't have jobs, so that's where all this stems from.
Well, there's one thing that is definitely going right, Ruffin. As I switch topics, it's Lent and the menu that's evolving over at Fino's on the River. Fantastic.
Yeah, we talked about it today. Chris Muffoletto's letting our chefs really spread their wings. It's pretty cool and special to see what's happening over at Fino's on the River with the crawfish season. We're looking at lobsters are really getting high, so we're looking at king crab legs as a special on Sunday. There's a lot of things that we're looking at doing that can be a whole lot of fun that we're really excited about.
And we are as well.
The Christmas tree is came down on Ash Wednesday, so perfect timing. We had the Mardi Gras tree and everybody loved it, and then we
segue to the fan, and then we'll have it up next year be bigger and better.
All right, so before we let you go, give me the details on how that big boy was felled. How many people did it take to bring it down?
You know, I to put it up, to me, my dad, and six other guys. So taking it down, man, they took it down so fast. These guys are pros, and they have it all stocked up. And it took them less a day. I think it was one day.
That's pretty impressive.
Pretty impressive. But we finally found somebody knew what they were doing.
All right, but you, your dad, nothing and six against, other guys, that's not dad, a bad crew.
It was a good story. You know, mom died, and it was actually a tribute to her, and for me, it was a tribute also to Catherine Howard, who touched so many lives in Lafayette and passed away this past summer. Jamie Howard, who's one of my dearest friends' wife. So it was a very special Christmas to honor to the classic, most classic ladies I ever met in my life, Catherine Howard and my mother, Cecile. So it was great.
Incredibly well said. Ruffin, next time you come on, I'll share details, but your buddy Gordy let him and Jerry DiNardo racing story out of the bag. We got that last Friday, by the way.
Oh, man. Yeah, I got to tell you that one day. That's good stuff.
We'll go through that next Monday, stuff. But I don't want to tarnish the way you ended it, because that was absolutely perfect, Ruffin. So thank you, as always.
Oh, my God. All right, brother.
I love it. Ruffin Roderick, owner of Ruffino's on the River, and they put the tree up. They did it for the right reasons, and a lot of people got to enjoy it all the way through to Ash Wednesday. We'll just call that a tease at the end there, though. We'll have a story next Monday. We'll get to sharing it with him. When we return, Jace Conrad. We'll talk some Cajuns baseball next. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
What happened this weekend, and what's next for Cajuns baseball? Get the latest right now on 103.7 The Game from former UL All-American Jace Conrad.
Right back in. This is B2BS. That's Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love joined by Clint Domingue, and we're about to bring aboard the ARDCO Equipment Hotline, Jace Conrad, former Lafayette High Mighty Lion, UL Raging Cajun, and these days doing a great job helping out local people as an insurance and risk advisor with Assured Partners. How are you, Jace?
Doing well, Ben. Thanks for having me.
I know there's disappointment. Cajuns dropped 2 out of 3 at home to Loyola Marymount, but one of the positives to take away, I would imagine, is the performance Friday from Gunnar Leger. You don't expect anything less, but it's great to see him rewarded from some of his outings so far, what he's brought to the table.
Yeah, definitely. You know, Gunner threw well. It's good that y'all try to get first win of a series, which we did. But you know, we got to find a way to get some series wins here starting soon.
Hey, Jace, this is Clint Dumming here, producer for Bumper to Bumper Sports. And the question I have is about the guy that right behind Gunnar Leger, Brendan Young, wound up looking really good. 4 innings of shutout work. What do you say about him? And could he wind up being one of those key cogs once we get into conference play starting this weekend?
Yeah, definitely. It's, like you said, conference weekend, you know, coming up, it's go time for sure. Coach Robes definitely looking for guys that are going to step up and give the team a chance to win. I think anyone, you know, at this point in the season with a record like it is now, you know, I really feel like kids that are getting opportunities, if they perform, they're going to get a locked-in spot. Coach Robe obviously strives to win whenever, you know, conference ball comes around or conference play comes around. And as far as I see it, there's still a lot of openings for people to come in and really take a position from someone.
Cajuns baseball so far 6-9 down, but they've got a chance to turn it around. 5 games this week. UNO, Southern Miss coming to the Teague in the midweek, and then at Little Rock for the Sun Belt Conference opening series. Jace Conrad, our guest. What can you do as a coach? What can you do as a teammate when somebody like Daniel LaHare, obviously talented, they count on him a ton, is going through the type of offensive slump that he is? I know they've bounced him around different spots in the lineup, but how do you rejuvenate a guy that's that talented?
Well, the thing is, you know, most importantly, from a player standpoint, you got to block out all the noise. I mean, people are talking, what's wrong with Daniel? Why can't Daniel hit right now? As a player, you got to shut that off right away. Continue to work while your opportunities, as they present themselves. I mean, I guarantee you right now as we speak, he's probably not at practice because it's a Monday and they're probably just working out, but he's finding ways to get his swings in today. He's working his tail off, to get out of this slump. And as a coach, all you can really do, man, is be positive. Try not to do too much with the players, with the hitter, and see if you can't help him mentally more than physically.
And, Jace, we're looking at the team, Hanson Monaco. One of the big storylines coming into the season was his injury. And now we're seeing him be more used as a first baseman on Friday. He started out as a catcher and then got pulled and moved to first base. Could you see that being more of a permanent role for him as a first baseman, once again, as we head to conference play?
Yeah, Coach Robe's going to put whoever's hitting in the lineup when conference play comes around. I mean, if you got to move Monica to first base to get another bat in the lineup, then he's going to do it. At the end of the day, it's going to come to producing runs and playing good defense. And I think that's, like I said earlier, we're still kind of waiting for a couple guys to step up. I see some kids trying, but we got to put it together both offensively and defensively. And like you said, I think you can definitely see Monica here at first base, especially while we're waiting for LeHaire to kind of come around a little bit.
If you subtract Leje from the equation, Jace, who else do you like right now in this pitching staff as far as starting quality stuff, and how do you see the rest of that week in rotation shaking out?
Well, I'm going to have to kind of wait and see. Coach Robe, he's got a unique way, a unique style of coaching, and I really can't even guess who we're going to see from here on out. I mean, he's going to put together whatever puzzle he thinks is going to win the game and win series. So I'll be curious myself. I'm not going to speak for him, but I'll be curious to see what he does here in the next couple weeks.
I'm curious about the Wednesday night game, and partly, Jace, because it's going to be on, really regional and national television, CST. So I don't know if you had the chance to play against Southern Miss. I mean, this is obviously a pretty big opportunity, the Cajuns maybe to get a little bit in the RPI terms, but what do you make out of that game against the Eagles?
Yeah, I did get a chance to play against Southern Miss. I always do. So with that being said, we got to worry about tomorrow night, and then we'll take it one game at a time. But I think from here on out, I'm not going to say you got to win every midweek game, but it's going to be, you're going to want to definitely give your best effort because we're in a position now where we can use all the RPI points that we need.
Exactly. I think that's going to be the biggest thing is in terms of RPI and getting things done in the midweek and from this point forward, because you look at Sun Belt Conference play, once again, starting next week against Little Rock. We're talking about Wednesday night. I also look ahead to tomorrow's matchup up against the UNO Privateers. What's kind of thought process you're going to have with this midweek matchup, kind of just want to get past this one before you get to a more marquee ball game?
Yeah, no, it's and that's what's hard for the players right now is – they're looking forward to conference play. I know they are. It's that time of the year. But at the same time, you got a team in UNO that's going to come and compete. They got a good coach over there. They're going to be pushed to win this game. So we got to stay focused. We got to go one game at a time. The further you look ahead, I think the more we're going to struggle. So I guarantee you Coach Robe right now has them focused on one game and one game only, and that's the one tomorrow night.
Jace Conrad, good enough to join us Mondays in the 5 o'clock hour. We do appreciate the unique perspective. Continued success with Assured Partners. Jace, thank you so much.
I appreciate it, Ben. Thanks, guys.
And Clint, before we kind of sign off with this segment,
okay,
the idea that the Cajuns have fallen to 6-9 early on in the season, I know it heaps a lot of pressure, as we said, on those midweek games. You got to do what you can to win the conference tournament, peak at the right time. Do you have more optimism that the bats will come around, or that the starting pitching in particular will come around?
I think it has to be more about the starting pitching. That needs to turn around because I feel like the offense, it can always be up and down. But you have to realize, Ben, a lot of the games that they play are inside Russo Park. Russo Park, not exactly a hitter's park as we've seen this season and last season. It feels like it's not necessarily going to be a hitter's park. It's always been a pitcher's park. And if this rotation can kind of be established, again, maybe Brandon Young is back into his groove after having a rough outing against Texas to start the season off, and also the San Diego State game. I like what I saw from him in four shutout innings of relief work. Got to keep Michael Lomont ready to go for these midweek games. As a closer, it's all about what you do with that weekend rotation, though, because, again, you can make that RPI look as pretty as you want. I think that you need to be able to win the conference and therefore the conference tournament to make it into that College World Series field.
Let's take our final break of the hour. When we return, it's time to throw a little bit of shade. All right, maybe a lot of it. And for quite some time, it's no secret on this program, is it? LeVar Ball has taken the lead. Leader in the clubhouse status. He's been shaded more than anybody else. And now James Dolan is trying to get what maybe rightfully belongs to him. Ultimate buffoonery from Madden Square Garden over the weekend. I'll share that with you and more on the other side. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports coming back in on 103.7 The Game.
Is Acadiana's number one sports station.
And you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Get in on the conversation.
Call on the game hotline.
706-0111.
706-0111.
Appropriate tunage. Yeah, I think that's fair. Feels a little ominous. Clint's been getting all kind of phone calls during interviews. You can call us back now. Bumper to Bumper Sports. We're back in. And guestless on 103.7 The Game. I'm imagining that those were some Will Wade LSU-related calls that you wanted to get in. Again, now you can. At the top of the 6 o'clock hour, you can. Our only scheduled guest from now until 7 o'clock, Chad Porcio, head basketball coach of the Class 4A state champs, the Brobridge Tigers. That is an enormous upset that they pulled Friday night in Lake Charles. They earned every bit of it, went to the free throw line 44 times, and they beat the number one Bossier Bearcats, final score of 61-58. So, Pomp Bro, we're going to holler at you at 6:15. Between now and then, we've got time for you on this show. Doesn't matter if it's LSU, Will Wade, LSU baseball, which, hey, we're almost 2 hours strong. Haven't hit that bag yet. But we did just talk some Cajuns baseball with Jace Conrad. Respond to any and all of it. Even our projected win totals that we've thrown out from Bet Online. LSU over-under for the 2019 season, 9. Let us know what you think. 706-0111. While we wait, this is just too good to pass up. It's time for your daily reminder. It's a PSA locally. No one throws shade outside your home or business like the pros at Patio Center. Go to the website, patiocenter.com. Check out the retractable shades and screens, the standing sea metal awnings, and the customized patio covers with the cypress accents. And know that you can trust in their management. Top down, it starts with Mark. They're going to help you to create a vision and then fulfill it. You can also trust their professional installers inside your home. Collectively, the group at Patio Center, they're ready to up your patio game in 2019. All it takes to start, a trip to patiocenter.com. The kings of customization, it's never one size fits all for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at patiocenter.com.
Jimmy Dolan. You've come up, oh, I don't know, a time or four. Usually it's for trying to kick Charles Oakley out of your gym. But this time around, you don't just deserve shade. You went straight up like mob boss. And it's absolutely uncalled for. At a game played in Madison Square Garden over the weekend, while exiting the floor through a tunnel, Knicks owner James Dolan was being heckled by somebody in the stands. By the way, the reason it was easy to hear him is because there wasn't anybody still there. Nobody gives a damn about your Kristaps Porzingis-less team. But this guy yells out to James Dolan, sell the team. If you've seen the video, you know. I wanted to play the audio, but I didn't think it was going to work without the visual part, so I'll explain it to you. After yelling, sell the team, this fan draws the attention of James Dolan. He walks right up to him and basically says, I hope you enjoy watching the Knicks on TV from here on out. You're banned from Madison Square Garden. And then starts to point towards some of his goons behind him. And that guy points back up at him. Yeah, that guy. Make sure that you know, the guy with the wand and the magic ticket takeaway powers, make sure he goes and sees that guy. And he points to the guy who yelled, sell the team. Are you serious? In what context is that a good idea? In what business is that a good idea? You're in the entertainment industry. You're not entertaining your fans. They let you know about it. You had a chance to do something solid. You had a chance to even walk away and ignore it. But James Dolan went for what's behind door number three. Enjoy watching the Knicks on TV. I hope the dude never watches another millisecond of that team.
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PetioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
And so now that makes it like LeVar Ball 13, James Dolan 4, and Urban Meyer like 3. But there are some candidates that might catch up in the race there. Let's get out now to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Tommy, thanks for your patience. You want to go in on the sink or swim questions?
Yeah, don't call me a patient. I'm suffering from old people's disease. Sorry for the miscue earlier. Yeah, I think the Tigers will win 10 games this year. I think they can win 11, but they always seem to lose one they shouldn't. And I don't think things will change. On basketball, as much as I'd like to say that Tigers will go all the way in a tournament, I think, at least in the SEC tournament, I think even with just a couple of games, there's so many things that can change. And without the coach there to make the adjustments mid-game, I'm just not that confident that they will win. So there I am on those two.
All right. I love it. We appreciate it, Tommy.
Send me a pill.
There you go. Nobody else will get that. As Clint would say, that's inside baseball. I know Tommy. Tommy called the cell phone, and by the cell phone, I mean my cell phone, like 35 minutes ago. Clint, you probably didn't even recognize this. It was before Ruffin came on, and I had to ask you who was on the line. Why? Couldn't read my text. Tommy was calling.
Yeah.
A little busy here, guy. Just running a show. Just talking. Might have to find another means of communication, you and I. I don't know if the text machine's going to do it for me. And you know me, I don't keep the iPad charged, so naturally I'm not able to use that for texting purposes. Oh, wait, I couldn't anyway because you're an ass and you have an Android.
Hey,
what is your problem?
Do we have time to kind of break all of this down to begin with?
You're going to explain to me why having an Android in 2019 is a good decision?
No, I was going to say, what's wrong with me?
Oh.
I don't think we have enough time in the show.
No, we don't have enough time for that. But that's a fair and valid question on your part. Let's get back into some of the sink or swim questions. Tommy answered a few of them. LSU football projected over-under win total 9, according to Bet Online. Understand this is regular season only. And universally, we've gotten over on that number. To expect LSU to go 12-0 is a bit foolish. I'm just going to go ahead and throw that out there. I mean, even under Saban, as I mentioned earlier, LSU had one season with one loss. They won a national championship, 2003. Every other season, they had 3 losses. Every other one. Under Les Miles, you had the one undefeated regular season. I know it didn't end well, but it's just so incredibly rare. And I don't know if this 2019 team is going to resemble that 2011 team, which, for my money, is still the best LSU football team that I've ever seen. But everybody likes over. I do too. But I'm more in the 10, possibly 11 range. I'm not in the 11, possibly 12 range. As far as the other question, can LSU win the SEC tournament? I'm not overly concerned about Tony Benford and his place on the bench for this tournament. That'll be more important come NCAA tournament time. I mean, everybody they're going to play in the SEC tourney, they're pretty sure they've seen in the regular season, right? That's part of it, is that they're familiar foes. All of a sudden, you get to the big dance and you're having a game plan for Big Ten teams, Pac-12 teams, you know, colonial conference teams that you've never heard of before or seen before. on film, that's when it gets a little bit different. But I'm not too worried about the Tony Benford side of the SEC tournament. And I think it's starting to come out a little bit more and more that chances are looking better that Javonte Smart might be reinstated for the tournament. Those are all great things. If Naz Reid comes back from what's been labeled a concussion, even better. They can't make a run without Reid. That I feel certain about. They could do some damage without Smart because of how singularly dominant Trey Waters can be, but that's not a button you want to press unless you have to. If you push this team toward more of a Trey and Prey offense, you can have what you did when LSU and Florida played in the PMAC. You can have an over-reliance on Waters, and for me that is probably not the best thing. That wouldn't be my preferred direction if I could avoid it. CD's cutting phone calls off at the kneecaps there. All right, not enough time. I'll respect that. But we can take it at the top of the 6 o'clock hour. We are 2 hours in the rear view so far. It's been a heck of a show. We're into double-digit callers. We'll keep that flowing, and then we'll talk to a champ at 6:15. Chad Porcio, head basketball coach of the Bro Bridge Tigers, on top of the Class 4A universe here in Louisiana. And what a win over Bossier. We'll celebrate it with Coach next. Plus, we'll go back into the legal tampering period for the NFL and some of the rumored signings that'll kick off Wednesday when we head to free agency period. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. We always tamper. Sometimes it's legal on 103.7 The Game.
Interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah!
And now let's get started.
Ready to roll. It's hour number 3 of Bumper to Bumper Sports, live on Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game. Ben Love and the famous Clint D. One more hour with some gusto from inside the 237 Roof Studios. No job too big or too small. Just call Lafayette Roofing, 237-7663. There's a horse, and we've beaten it a good bit. I'm aware of it. I'm sensitive to it. If you've been with us since 4 o'clock, you've heard plenty of Will Wade LSU chatter. I've generated it. I've given you my thoughts, and we've taken double-digit phone calls on the subject. If you'd like to continue, my number is 706-0111. Otherwise, I'm going to skip it to another subject, one that we've paid little time to today. NFL free agency kicks off on Wednesday, but for some reason, the legal tampering period, a hilarious phrase in and of itself, began today. What's that mean to you? Negotiations, reported deals are flowing like the salmon of Capistrano. So let me tell you about it right now. The biggest deal of the day, I would have to think, involves a former LSU Tiger, just based off the sheer numbers of it, and a guy that people had maybe some uncertainty about as far as being paid at this type of elite level. Quan Alexander is going to get $54 million over 4 years. Half of that scratch is guaranteed. He's moving from Tampa to San Francisco to play for the 49ers. It's an interesting move for the 49ers, who really kind of swung and missed on Reuben Foster, obviously off the field issues that are involved there. But John Lynch, heading that franchise over on the Bay, is willing to take a chance on Quan Alexander, a guy that just tore his ACL all of a couple months ago on October the 21st. And what's odd about it is this. That money for Quan Alexander is pretty fantastic, wouldn't you say? Let's see, quick math here, $13.5 million a year. Reports have come out. The highest Tampa was willing to go to keep Quan was $10 million a year. So congrats to former LSU Tiger Quan Alexander heading to play for San Francisco. Saints fans, probably happy to get him out of the NFC South, and he is getting paid. Let's keep it going. A former Louisiana native, Landon Collins of Dutchtown, has told Josina Anderson of the Mothership that he plans to sign with the Washington Redskins. The one-time Pro Bowl safety expected to get $84 million over 6 years. And the interesting note there to me is that he'll be going to a division rival from the G-Men to the Redskins. Some of your big names, big players so far today and throughout this legal tampering period have been the Detroit Lions and the Oakland Raiders. The Pats have been a big name too, but mainly because they're doing their annual fire sale where they let some of the aging or expensive players go. I'll connect all those dots right here. Justin Coleman is heading to the Detroit Lions, a defensive back who's going to get $9 million a year over 4 years to play nickel. Seriously, this is an inside cover corner, and it's thought to be the highest paid nickelback contract in NFL history. 4 years, $36 million for Justin Coleman. The Lions didn't stop there. They went to a couple of very familiar faces for head coach Matt Patricia, a couple of former New England Patriots. The first, Danny Amendola, 1 year, $4.5 million deal. The second, a lot more money going to be owed here. Patricia and the Lions went and got Trey Flowers, a defensive end from the Patriots, and they're going to pay him $16.5 million a year or thereabouts over a five-year period. So the Lions not screwing around during the tampering period. Again, a lot of these deals should be made official beginning on Wednesday. Let's move it over now to the Oakland Raiders, soon to be the Vegas Raiders. They went out and got Antonio Brown over the weekend. Quite literally, a Saturday turned into Sunday, and we all lost an hour of sleep. Chucky was working. John Gruden and company got the best receiver in football, arguably. 3 years, a shade over $50 million total. A shade over $30 million of that is guaranteed. And what's interesting is they weren't done there. The Raiders went out today and got another marquee player from the New England Patriots, left tackle Trent Brown. 4 years, $66 million, what's expected there. That's the highest annual value for any offensive lineman in the NFL. So that's just a boatload of money when you consider upgrading the offensive line with Trent Brown, the defensive line with Trey Flowers, both from the Patriots, and you're giving these guys somewhere in the vicinity of a combined $145 million. But that wasn't it with the NFL damage done today. Nick Foles, Super Bowl MVP 2 years ago. He's going from Philly, excuse me, to Jacksonville. The deal there, 4 years, $88 million. And then a couple of other notes that either directly affect the Saints or maybe some Saints targets, former Saints players. Kenny Vaccaro, a former Saint, took a one-year deal with the Titans, and that roll of the dice paid off for him. He was awarded today, or reportedly awarded today, a four-year, $26 million deal to stay in Nashville and play safety for the Titans. The Saints did agree to terms with Craig Robertson, a two-year extension worth about $4 million. Yesterday, it came out the Saints agreed to terms to extend Chris Banjo. So right now, Saints are doing some things to lock down special teamers and some of the hustle type of glue guys, if you will. But what's interesting, Adam Humphries, who played with the Tampa Bay Bucks last season, pretty good inside slot receiver. The Saints were thought to be maybe in the market for him. About an hour and a half ago, Adam Humphries, the rumor came out, would be signing with the Tennessee Titans. The numbers are what's interesting, though, and that's going to tell us something about how the Saints will go, I think, in this free agency period. Humphries landed with the Titans. The numbers reported to be 4 years, $36 million total. Now, our guy Larry Holder from The Athletic New Orleans, he's the one who said, yeah, the Saints really wanted to look at Adam Humphries in this free agency period, but they viewed him more as a $5 million per year type of player. So what does that tell us? A couple of things. One, the Saints know they need some help for Michael Thomas. They need a slot receiver. Yes, they've got an up-and-comer in Tre'Quan Smith. Don't know if he's ready for prime time just yet. Ted Ginn Jr. getting a little long in the tooth. And the deal they made to go out and get Cam Meredith just kind of has bust written all over it, at least so far. I know there's an injury involved, but it's not paying dividends. The Saints need another productive receiver. It'd be nice if he could play in the slot. And so even though that will be a position of need, probably along with defensive end, during this free agency period, The other thing we learned and reaffirmed today, the Saints don't have a lot to spend. They need somebody in that $5 million a year range, $9 million Adam Humphreys, too rich for their blood. And that brings you back to a point that I saw earlier today, and I'll make sure that we get it onto the program now, because again, the numbers just don't lie. According to Albert Breer of the NFL Network, as of this morning, when the legal tampering really started to fly, the Saints were the second tightest team to the cap in the National Football League. The Bucs were number one. Here's betting that's changed after they let go of Quan Alexander and Adam Humphreys. But as of this morning, the Bucs were about $2.4 million away from the cap. The Saints were about $3.7 million away from the cap. And so they really don't have too much that they're going to be able to do. Not a lot of luxuries that will be afforded to them during this free agency period. But you got deals that are going on just about everywhere. And this I thought was interesting as well as we wind down the opening segment of B2BS in hour number three. Terrell Suggs, T-Sizzle, or the Sizz, if you watch Ballers like I do, Terrell Suggs informed the Ravens earlier today he will be moving on. It's the only home he's ever known. So I wonder just how optimistic the Ravens are about the Lamar Jackson era. Terrell Suggs is moving on, and all indications are that he'd like to fit in with the Arizona Cardinals, which nobody ever said. But apparently Terrell Suggs did. They've got a new coach in Cliff Kingsbury, might end up with Kyler Murray, and apparently that is appealing to one Terrell Suggs. Very interesting. I didn't see that coming when I woke up this morning. One thing that you need to know about so that when you wake up Sunday morning, you've got the right plans. 103.7 The Game is throwing a bracket reveal watch party at Pete's on Johnston. The fun will unofficially start at 5. To be honest, it'll probably be earlier than that as we watch conference championship basketball. But the CBS television coverage of the bracket reveal starts at 5, and so we'll certainly be rolling then at Pete's on Johnston. But the real beautiful part of it, and you know we planned it this way, it's St. Paddy's Day. So come out, have a ball. We're all going to be out. The whole crew from Acadiana Sports Station will be at Pete's on Johnston this Sunday. We'll see exactly where LSU lands, how many SEC teams get in, who got snubbed, and we might just have some conversations about Will Wade. I think there's a chance that that occurs this Sunday as we enjoy two-for-one beer specials as well at Pete's on Johnston. I'm getting ready to enjoy this next conversation immensely. Chad Porcio, Bro Bridge Basketball, when we return. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
It's Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game. Get in on the conversation. Call on the game.
Stop yapping and get back to work.
Okay, everyone, let's get back.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
And you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 1037thegame.com.
Follow on Facebook and Twitter now
at 1037 The Game.
Right back in, and it's time to talk with the champs. I'm excited about this. They pulled off, to me, what was a sizable upset and capped off an historic run for an Acadiana area team. Bumper to Bumper Sports, right back in on 103.7 The Game. And you better believe I'm talking about those Bro Bridge Tigers. 61-58. Bro Bridge over Bossier, and it sounded out throughout Louisiana, emanating from Lake Charles on Friday night. Those Bossier Bearcats, I saw them a couple of nights before, dusting off Karen Crow. Bossier, Jacoby Decker, really were going through that Class 4A bracket like a hot knife through butter. And then Bro Bridge came to town. 44 free throws attempted over in Burton Coliseum. A slow, methodical pace that certainly seemed to win the day. Hey, that's how it seemed to me. I wasn't in the building. But the person you're about to hear from, he was not only there, he's the head coach. He brought the first ever state basketball championship in program history to Bro Bridge High School. And right now, he's aboard the ARDCO Equipment Hotline. It's time to find Coach Chad Porcio. Coach, welcome aboard. First off, congratulations. I'm sure everybody in Bro Bridge is still just through the roof.
Oh, super excited, man.
super excited. I actually was out at Fort Bob. We watched the film of the game on TV on CSC, and the kids were just absolutely loving it, man.
You got to give me some of what that scene was like.
Oh, it was unbelievable, man. Unbelievable. First time ever in school history, and just what an accomplishment. You know, most of the time, most of the city of Bro Bridge was there. At least that's what it felt like. The crowd was great. It was just crazy. Madness.
And I understand that your team went 33-5. Still, playing against that Bossier team, did it feel like you weren't getting the respect that you wanted, and how did that affect the kids?
Yeah, we saw their scores all year long. You know, they won that first round playoff game by 60 something. The closest game they played in the playoffs was a semifinal game at 28 points. So we heard and we saw how good they were, but you know, I think a lot of people thought they had 20 points better than us. And we say we're going to battle, and that's what we did. Super talented team. You know, we knew we had, you know, kids stuck to a game plan, and it worked out for us. It worked out.
Coach Chad Porcio, our guest on 103.7 The Game. I'm very interested in that game plan. So from late Tuesday night after you beat Leesville until late Friday night, how did you formulate what came out to be just a historic game plan, frankly?
Surprisingly, we actually gave them off Wednesday. It was such a quick turnaround. We stayed in Lake Charles Tuesday night. We got back Wednesday morning, and we sent the kids home, and me and my assistant coach, all we did was watch film on Bossier Wednesday to come up with a game plan. We gave the kids off completely. We went over the game plan on Thursday. Talked about, you know, key points, just make the game as slow and ugly as possible. Guard them, keep them off the glass, win the rebound battle. And if we knew we were going to turn it over, when we turned it over, it was important that we didn't get live ball turnovers. You know, turnovers that turned into transition points. If we were going to turn it over, we needed to make sure we threw it out of bounds so that we could get back and guard and make them score against our half-court defense. And again, the kids, we had 26 turnovers, but only 9 of them were live ball turnovers. We only gave up 9 points in transition. We killed them on the glass. We got rebounded them 44-26 on the glass. So kids stuck to the game plan. We slowed them down. We wanted the score to be in the 50s, and we held them under 60 at 58 points. So kids followed the game plan to the
Obviously, Coach, defensively, you got exactly what you wanted. In terms of live ball turnovers, that's an important distinction. Same thing. But how do you devise a game plan, and how do you execute going 15 of 27 from the field? I know that's not a lot of volume, but that is an incredible percentage offensively.
Yeah, the crazy thing is we shot 27 shots, and their point guard shot 29. So
wow.
He single-handedly outshot us. But again, what was important is, you know, they got a lot of shots up, but the quality of our shot compared to the quality of their shot was a lot different. You know, they shot 66 times to our 27 and lost. But we lived at the free throw line. We attacked the lane and got them in foul trouble. And again, you know, nowadays with analytics and NBA game, you know, everybody says, you know, twos are not good to shoot. You know, if you're going to shoot, you're going to shoot a three or you're going to lay it up. But, I mean, we only shot 8 threes in the game. Now, granted, we made 5 of them. But, you know, we played a little old-school basketball, you know, live at the free throw line, live in the lane, and shoot only good looks from 3. And they shot a bunch of threes, and I don't know how many of them were good looks.
The Brobridge Tigers are the champs in Class 4A. Their head coach, Chad Porcio, with us for another moment or two. Tell me about your senior point guard, Seth Alexander. He was the most outstanding player. 23 points, how about 19 of 24 from the stripe? That's got to take a pretty, I would think, rugged determination to get into the paint and then take the harm.
Yeah, he's I can't say enough about him. He's a great kid. He's a great basketball player. He's a great athlete. You know, he was state runner-up in Class 4A in track last year as a triple jumper. He's a 40, 8.5 foot triple jumper at 5'8", you know, explosive kid. He's a 3.8 GPA student, 23 on his ACT, comes from good family, just can't, he's tough as nails, handles the ball 95% of the time for us. We don't let anybody else handle it. Just can't say enough about it. Guarded their best guy the entire night. I can't describe what he's meant to me in this program over the last 4 years. Words won't do him justice.
I know how coaches think for the most part. You don't worry about anybody else. All you do is look at us, right? So when you were looking at us, as in the Brobridge Tigers, when did you have a sense this year that you could accomplish more than maybe people on the outside expected?
Well, we knew, we really thought we would be good. We didn't know, you know, if a state title was realistic, but we really felt like, you know, we underachieved. Last year we were the 4 seed and lost in the second round, tipping at the buzzer. So as this season got going, we thought we could be good and possibly be a top 28 team. And then just as the season went on, we had some ups and downs, but we just had the perfect group of guys. You know, we didn't have any, you know, we had a point guard, we have a couple shooters, got a couple bigs. We just got a good makeup of the style of basketball we like to play. It's just like the perfect personnel. It was a good match. The chemistry was good. Kids believed in the coaches, and we obviously believed in them. And it threw some ups and downs through the season. Right at the end of district, my assistant coach said, he said, man, I'm telling you, we might be peaking at the right time. And sure enough, he was right. He was dead on.
Coach, I had the opportunity to see Oliver Winston and Westgate a couple of different times this year. You and I know that's a good basketball team. You got to take me to the fourth quarter comeback at home in the state quarterfinals. What your guys did to get that lead back in front of the home crowd, I've heard it's special. I'd love for you to tell me about it.
Oh, unbelievable. I mean, you know, we come out of halftime in the third quarter. They just come out and hit a barrage of threes. You know, their guard's always so good, and they shoot that three ball, man. They came out and hit us in the mouth. We're down 11. I think the lead actually got to 12 at one point. And then we had two guys in foul trouble, so we actually only had three starters out on the floor. And our shooters just responded. Dalton Alexander hit a three. We were down 11. I looked up and I told my assistant coach, I said, man, this moment might be too big for us. Westgate's been here before, and you can tell. And right after I said that, we hit a three. We got a stop. We hit another three by Kaiser Platt. We got a turnover. Then he hit a pull-up jumper. And I think we went on a 12-0 run to take a one-point lead going into the fourth quarter. And then it was back and forth the entire fourth quarter. Just a great high school basketball game. Two great teams going at it. And the environment was crazy. Like I said, we had to close the doors at 6:50 for a 7 o'clock tip-off. Stop letting people in the gym. That's the kind of atmosphere and game it was.
Coach, I'm not sure if all the planning's been done yet, but tell me, I mean, when's the party happening? When's the parade?
Oh, the party's fun. No, we enjoyed ourselves, man. We stayed in Lake Charles. Like I said, we fed the kids good. We had a good time. We enjoyed ourselves. They spent some time with the family this weekend and celebrated with their family and friends. And I'm sure, you know, we're in the works of setting up a pep rally for the school so they can, you know, join in on the fun, and as well as, you know, getting involved with the community and trying to set up a parade so they can show their appreciation for what these young men did. Like I said, it's a credit to them, no doubt, a credit to them.
It's nothing short of remarkable. The Brobridge Tigers, for the first time, state champs boys basketball. And right now they rule Class 4A. Coach Chad Porcio, good enough to give us time. I know you're in high demand today, brother. Thanks for doing this.
No problem. Thank you for having me. Y'all take care.
Amazing what they accomplished. Hey, I told you Friday, they find a way to pull off that upset, we'll help throw the parade for them. Might have to put my money where my mouth is there. We'll be right back in. Half hour to go. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports live on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Madness. place in the NFL.
One of them is famous in Cajun country. The other has a set of pipes that never quits. Seriously, we've tried before.
Cork. Now the tape.
Together, Ben and Clint bring you home on 103.7 The Game.
There it is, revving up and right back in. And we've got some interesting news to share with you. A former LSU Tiger getting paid on the gridiron, and another former Tiger not thrilled about the lack of payment on the diamond. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, right back in on 103.7 The Game. I do one more time want to thank head coach Chad Porcio, the Brobridge Tigers. My man is everywhere right now because of what they pulled off Friday inside of Burton Coliseum. So thanks again and congrats go out to Bro Bridge. You want to be a part of the conversation between now and 7? Open skies, open phone lines. Hit us up, 706-0111. But let's get to that news that I've now teased for you. Tyrann Mathieu is going to be a Kansas City Chief. And that escalated quickly. The Honey Badger, who had opportunities to leave the desert this time a year ago, maybe go after some real big change, took what was considered to be a bit of a pay cut for what he was probably worth to take his chances with the up-and-coming Houston Texans. One-year deal, and he ain't staying in Houston. According to a report from Adam Schefter of the Mothership, the Honey Badger is heading to play for Andy Reid and the Kansas City Chiefs, but wait until you get a load of the money. 3 years, $42 million. Honey Badger don't give a you know what because he is paid. 3 years, $42 million. And what a team that Kansas City continues to assemble. Last year, defensively, that was the obvious Achilles heel. And I think even without Kareem Hunt in the backfield, they figured out a way to get it done at the running back position. With Tyreek Hill, some of their options at the receiver position, I think the best receiving tight end in football, Travis Kelce, and then the MVP of the league, Pat Mahomes. Offensively, the Chiefs are going to be more than just okay. They'll be one of the league's best offenses. Defensively, they were porous. But now you get to look at a safety tandem of Eric Berry and Tyrann Mathieu. When healthy, that is horrifying for opposing offenses. And so good for Tyrann Mathieu and good for the Kansas City Chiefs. They might just be able to challenge New England a little bit more come playoff time. But that's an impressive move that Kansas City made. The Chiefs were reportedly in the Earl Thomas sweepstakes. He's somebody who obviously got injured last year very early on for the Seattle Seahawks, flipped off his own sideline on the stretcher on the way out, and he's somebody who is going to be, I think, a big target in the free agency market. But Tyrann Mathieu getting $14 million a year to go play for one of the best young teams in football in the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, the other side of that coin and the other side of my tease in the opener, this happened maybe an hour before the show started, CD. We'll call it about 3 o'clock. But a report coming out from Brian McTaggart, MLB.com, Alex Bregman, quote-unquote, disappointed in the contract that he's going to be receiving from the Houston Astros. And this is a bit of a tough situation. Because of the structure of the collective bargaining agreement, they're going to pay Alex Bregman $640,000 this year. Yes, he was just fifth in the voting of the American League MVP. I get that. He certainly is worth more than that. And at least some of the beef might be centered around the fact that after Carlos Correa won the AL Rookie of the Year, they gave him, I think, $1 million plus. So he got paid. And Alex Bregman in this situation is not, while the Stros try to save some of that money to go out and get talent to surround Bregman with. So this is a little bit frustrating, and I've been sensing that on the Twitter sphere for Astros fans. Why is Alex Bregman this up in arms about it? Need him to be a little more of a team player, this, that, and the other. you can't feel too bad for him. He did make $5.9 million as a signing bonus in June of 2015. But the bigger picture to me, Clint, I don't want to paint Alex Bregman as a diva. I don't have any reason to do that. He can hook a brother up with an interview the next time he goes into the clubhouse at Minute Maid Park to do a live show, but that's a different story. The bigger question that this brings up, is there any chance that the Astros end up splintering at least a little bit from the inside? I think we've seen this coming for a while. Too many talented young players is seldom ever seen as a bad thing.
Yeah.
But from Altuve to Correa to Bregman to Springer.
Yep.
They have so much talent under 30 years old, and you got to lock all that down long term. When you've got guys that are on some of these, you know, early on rookie deals that are kind of controlled pretty thoroughly by the CBA, I'm not sure there's too much that you can do. Nonetheless, Bregman's worth more than what he's making, but it's just kind of, I hate to say it this way, the rules of the game.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, that's kind of just what we're looking at in terms of the future of the MLB. I mean, we're looking at Bregman, a guy that definitely deserves a lot more money. I think that's the big, that's just him complaining. He's a little bit upset about the fact that he didn't get nearly as much as he thought he would.
Yeah, but I guess the point is this.
Yeah.
I know what we're getting. I don't like it, and I don't think it was needed publicly from Alex Bregman. I'm not saying he shouldn't feel that way. I'm saying he can keep that to himself.
Yeah.
Have a pep talk with your agent.
Exactly. Talk to your agent. Talk to somebody else who's involved with these kind of conversations, because at the end of the day, you saying that probably winds up hurting your case a little bit more, because you're like, oh, because you're going to wind up looking at that on MLB.com if you're Jeff Luhnow or several other people in the front office.
No doubt. And I don't think this affects his standing with the organization one iota. I'm not suggesting that either. But eventually push is going to come to shove. And when it does, hopefully Alex Bregman's on the right side of the line. Hopefully they're able to afford all the big names that they would like to. So just an interesting, to me, mixture of news. On one side, Tyrann Mathieu is going to get paid buku bucks to join one of the best teams in the league, a struggling defense that now has a really nice two-headed monster at safety. On the other side, Alex Bregman plays for a team that's considered, kind of like the Chiefs, one of the two or three best in all of its sport. But how long are they going to be able to keep these guys together? And for the crowd that thinks, you know, Justin Verlander's getting older, eventually they'll get that money off the books, JV doesn't look like a guy to me that's going to be done in the next year or two.
Yeah,
I think he's going to be a dominant pitcher for at least 3 to 4 more years in Major League Baseball. Don't know why the Astros would want to get rid of that.
No, you'd be ridiculous to get rid of that. And then also, like I said, that takes some money off the books. But at the same time, last year, I believe, you signed Carlos Correa to a monster – Carlos Correa, excuse me, Jose Altuve to a monster deal after his MVP season. So that's just so much money that you're having to use – and spend with the luxury tax and everything that the MLB has, and you just look at how everybody else is now in the MLB. You saw Nolan Arenado, what was it, like $200 million over the next like 10 years?
I think he's getting about $33 million a year.
Yeah. Same with your boy Bryce Harper. He's with the Phillies, $330 million over like 13 years. That is ridiculous.
But again, the way that the CBA is structured, some of these things you just can't control all that much. And ultimately, even if you don't want to hurt your head with all the math, the luxury tax, the collective bargaining agreement, the simple fact is this: there ain't enough room to pay everybody all the money. All right, we're going to take our final break of the program. Hey, don't forget, Thursday, B2BS will be out at the Tap Room River Ranch. But if you want to beat us there, we don't blame you. Tuesday night, trivia night at 8 o'clock. It's always themed. It's always fun. Wednesday night, ladies' night. And boy, the drink prices there, fantastic. I just heard from some of my wife's friends. They had a ball this last Wednesday. So, again, we'll be there Thursday. You want to beat us there? Be our guest at the Tap Room River Ranch. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we'll be right back to close the show on 103.7 The Game.
Never. Football season can't come fast enough.
No.
Are we there yet?
No.
Are we there yet?
You little.
Luckily, you have Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love to help get you by.
He's playing so much better now than he's ever done in his career. He's in better shape. He's hustling. He's working hard. He's got a maturity about him. I can't put into words just how proud I am of Chris, you know. And he, I shudder at the thought of where we'd be without him, to be honest with you. He's playing great, and I couldn't be happier for him.
There's Paul Maneri on LSU's professional hitter, Chris Reed. Bumper to Bumper Sports, right back in for the final time on 103.7 The Game. You want to call in? We welcome that. 706-0111. And we haven't talked a stitch about LSU baseball in this program. A couple of other things going on. But the Tigers took 2 out of 3 from Cal. It's something, as Maneri will tell you here, was much needed. And know that after this clip from Maneri, I will give you an update, an unfortunate one, on an LSU infielder that suffered an interesting injury.
It was obviously a very challenging weekend. That Cal team, man, they had a good ball club. We always knew about Andrew Vaughn, but little Darren Baker and their catcher is a great ball player, their leadoff hitter, their shortstop made all the plays. I mean, that's a really solid position player team. And what was amazing to me was the quality of their arms. I mean, those are great arms. That's going to be a team that'll contend for the Pac-12 championship. I don't have any doubt. Their coaches do a great job. And that was exactly what we needed to have, that kind of a tough series prior to starting SEC play next weekend.
We will let you hear more from Paul Maneri as we wind down the program, but this is something that came out through the wash. I'm seeing it from James Moran, Tiger Egg Magazine. Brant Broussard sprained his ankle during the walk-off celebration on Friday night. Too bad we already threw shade, because this is the kind of stuff that just infuriates me, man. Guys that get hurt dogpiling and stuff like that. I'm all for celebrating, but wow, this is awfully dumb. And if you think it's not a costly injury, Brant Broussard will not make the trip tomorrow when LSU takes on, who is it, Clint? Northwestern in Natchitoches, going up by 49?
Yeah, Northwestern State.
And so we'll see if this persists into the SEC opening series against Kentucky. But there you have it, a starting infielder on the shelf because of a walk-off celebration. That is not good. Some of the rest of the news of the day when it comes to LSU baseball, Jaden Hill, freshman pitcher from Arkansas, is progressing, but no timetable has yet been released for his return. When you couple that with the fact that Eric Walker just really hasn't looked right or ready yet, what exactly do you think Paul Maneri is going to do with his rotation? I don't think there's anything he can do. So, in my opinion, I think you're going to continue to look at Zach Hess. Threw 5 innings, gave up 2 earned runs, was very much unspectacular in a game that LSU won late Friday against Cal, but I don't see how he turns anywhere else other than, I would imagine, what? Zach Hess, Cole Henry, and then after that, CD? Are they going to continue to go with some of what we've seen on Sunday, or do you think they mix it up at all?
I think they might have to mix it up a little bit. It all depends on what kind of Devin Fontenot does going forward, because he wound up having a pretty decent performance in that second game of the doubleheader over the weekend.
I see what you're doing there. You're teasing a clip. You've been doing this too long, my friend. Here's what Maneri had to say about the bounce-back performance of Devin Fontenot.
That was, without a doubt, the highlight of the day. I'm not going to tell you anything that's not true. I challenged him last night. I got after him pretty good because I just didn't think he was fulfilling his great potential. This kid has the potential to be a major league pitcher. He's got a super arm. He's got a repeatable delivery, and he can throw strikes, and his slider's getting better. And I just want to push him through the threshold to make him want to be great, because the sky's the limit as far as I'm concerned with him. And, you know, he took the challenge that I put in his lap yesterday and responded to it today. We wouldn't have won without him today.
Now, as for getting away from the pitching and looking at what's happening at the dish, Maneri was very clear about one thing, maybe with the exception of professional hitter Chris Reed. The Tigers need to be more consistent at the plate.
You know, we had some guys that had a tough weekend, and when your superstars have tough weekends, it's hard to score a lot of runs, you know, and it's a lot of responsibility on those guys' shoulders. You know, Smith and Duplantis and Watson and Cabrera, I mean, you know, you put a lot on those guys, but they have the ability to handle it. And, you know, they didn't really have a great weekend this weekend. None of them did. And because of that, it was hard for us to score many runs. Fortunately for us, Beloso kind of got off the schneid there today after, you know, the first 2.5 games not really swinging the bat all that well.
And so interesting, two straight series leading into SEC play over the weekends. LSU's bats haven't been what anybody really expected them to be, CD. First it was at Texas, now against Cal.
Yeah, and with Texas it was kind of sort of expected, especially up against Bryce Elder on Friday night, because the dude was an absolute stud against the Cajuns opening weekend. But outside of that, it's like the series against Cal, there were some struggles. I just want to see this team get a little bit better, more consistent at the plate, like Maneri said. And I think you have an opportunity to do that, especially against a team like Kentucky that's not the Wildcats team that we've seen in recent years where they've been dominant.
I'm glad you brought that up. And same record as LSU, if I'm not mistaken. I think they're both 11-4 at this point. I did some of this research for the podcast last night. I believe they're both 11-4, but Kentucky 3-3 on the road. So they've been very good in Bluegrass over in Lexington, but once they get away from the friendly confines, they haven't exactly lit the world on fire. You're shaking your head. So, yes, 11-4. Shaking head up, down, I should say.
Yeah, they're 11-4. I think that's definitely going to be a fun series between these two teams to start off SEC play. Can't wait to see what these two
They don't have the kid Jelly over there right?
Like I said, I think that's a big reason why they're as good.
He was fantastic for what felt like about 7 years for Kentucky baseball.
He was a monster, man. One of the better pitchers I have seen in recent memory.
Another thing, and I guess we'll round the show out with this. We had some conversation geared toward it earlier. Took some calls on it, mainly regarding where LSU kind of falls within the parameters. But Bet Online put out projected win totals for the 2019 college football season. Understand this is regular season only. And understand the two top teams for the last half decade are the only two that are both projected to win 11 games on the nose. Alabama, Clemson. But there are two teams that they think are right on the cusp. Georgia, they've got a 10.5. Oklahoma, home of the last two Heisman Trophy winners, at 10.5. After that, I am seeing two teams that are at 10 wins for the over-under total, Ohio State without Urban Meyer, and Washington. Following that, you go down the line to 9.5, and I am counting four teams with that designation. Michigan, Notre Dame. How about Texas in that grouping and Oregon? So perhaps a bounce back year for the Oregon Ducks, maybe ascending back toward the top of the Pac-12 yet again. And then once you get to 9 wins to that plateau, only two teams. And I think right now they're mirror images of one another. LSU's one, Florida's the other. LSU fans will hope that they can climb the rest of the ladder faster than Dan Mullen's Gators, but offensively challenged teams, great defenses, always recruit well, just needed a change in head coach. They both have gotten it, and both of them projected to win 9 games. You look around the rest of the SEC, and I'm not going in order necessarily, just alphabetically, so mind that. But Auburn, over-under total is 8. Mississippi State is 8. Texas A&M is 7.5, and that's been really the talk of this Bet Online release today. Everybody thinks that Jimbo Fisher and the Aggies are going to leap over that bar. And I think from a program standpoint, I give you this analogy all the time. You go bowling, you really don't even have to show me the numbers that are on the ball, right? I don't need to see the weight. Just put it in my hands, I'll feel it. I'll be able to tell you about if it's where I need it to be. If I'm doing the field test about Texas A&M's program, they feel like they're getting heavier. They feel like they're getting better. But the schedule sometimes can be such a limiting factor. The Aggies next year play not only LSU and Bama from the West, but Clemson and then Georgia out of the SEC East. Yikes. That is absolutely brutal. And we're getting to talk some college football in March. That's a beautiful thing. Speaking of college football, Billy Napier and the Cajuns kick off spring ball tomorrow. We'll have some conversation toward that end, and Shea Dixon will join the program. I want to thank our guests today, Ross Dellinger, Ruffin Rodriguez, Jace Conrad, and Chad Porcio. It's been a fun edition of B2BS. Thanks to all of you people out there in listener land. For the famous Clint D, I'm Ben Love. We'll catch you tomorrow, 4 o'clock on 103.7 The Game.
From the 2-3